You're tuned to Focus on Campus, a weekly show which highlights faculty, staff, and students here at the University of Texas at El Paso. Good morning, I'm Louis Sines, your host for Focus on Campus, and joining us today is John White. What's your official title, John?
Curator. Garden curator.
Okay. Not a curandera.
No.
Curator. And he is a longtime friend. He knows a lot about plants and anything else that's going on with your garden and the crops out there. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. Plus also, there's going to be a special tour tomorrow at the Chihuahuan Gardens, and we're going to talk about that. John, thank you very much for being with us here today.
You're welcome. Thank you, Louis.
And so I started off a little bit here talking about the fact that there's going to be a tour tomorrow. But I didn't explain, for people who may not be familiar with it, Chihuahuan Desert Gardens, tell us what that is and what people can expect to see.
Well, the Chihuahuan Desert Gardens are about an acre and a half botanic garden located here in the center of UTEP's campus. And, of course, with all the construction, you have to basically enter off of Sunbold, come on campus. But we're in the middle of campus. A lot of students graduate from here and never know the garden was here because they walk to classes and they go around the museum, and the gardens are kind of elevated, so they tend to walk around it and they never know it's here. So it's kind of a hidden little asset here on campus. But we have about 750 different species of plants from the Chihuahuan Desert, primarily the northern part of the Chihuahuan Desert. And so people are, you know, feel free to come by. There's no admission charge. You can come by and look. You can download a guide off the website, utep.edu/museum, and go to the Chihuahuan Desert Plants, and there's a walking guide that you can download and bring it by and come by on weekends or during the week. You can get to see some of the plants that are on there. A lot of the plants that are in the garden are not available in local nurseries because they are plants of the desert. They may not propagate easily, so if you see one you like, you may not necessarily be able to go right out and buy it.
Of course, you can at the Native Plant Sale, which is an annual event you will have.
Right, and that'll be at the end of April, and we do have a lot of plants. I try and gather up as many plants as we can that are native to our area and have for the sale. The kind of the one-stop shopping there, you can get everything at once, but the gardens change through the seasons, so come through the garden on, you know, kind of a regular schedule, and you can kind of see some of the plants go through different stages from spring, summer, fall, and winter, and then back into coming back out in the spring. So it's interesting to come through the garden at different times because different things are in bloom, and you can see how the plants are growing.
Now, tomorrow, when people show up at the gardens and for that tour, is it going to be an organized tour where you'll be speaking, or is it a self-guided tour?
It'll be an organized tour. I have a couple people that are going to help. I'm not sure what our turnout's going to be because it was kind of open to the public. So, you know, it's hard to say how many are going to be there. But it's in conjunction with the Museum of Art downtown El Paso. They have a vanishing ice exhibit that they have at their museum. And the tundra, the ice caps, only receive about 10 inches of moisture, the same as the desert does. And so they're trying to relate a little bit of the commonality between the two, and basically the 10-inch or less rainfall or precipitation is the common tie between the two biomes. But the plants on the tundra are very, very small. They're windswept, so they're very, very short, very, very not very big, so they're just under, maybe under some of the ice. You have the ice in the ground that also keeps the moisture held, so it's not always available to plants. So they are in kind of almost a desert type situation too, because water is very limiting there. Even though there's ice and everything around it, it's just held up to where they can't get it. Whereas here, we just don't get enough moisture, 10 inches or less. This year in our garden, I think we're somewhere just a little over an inch for the whole year. So it's not very much water. So our plants are adapted to growing under the conditions here in this part of the Chihuahuan Desert. Now, a lot of the plants at the garden are from different parts of the Chihuahuan Desert. They might be from a canyon or a riparian area. So those plants do need more water than some of the plants that you see out here on the mesas, the bajadas here.
So the exhibit itself, the gardens, they're pretty much adapt to the seasons year-round?
Right. Yeah, we did lose a few in the 2011 big freeze, like a lot of people did. So we had some plants from the Chihuahuan Desert that were marginal, and we kind of knew that. We just didn't know it was going to drop so low and stay low for so long. But we did lose some cacti species that come from, you know, Mexico, a little bit more south into Mexico. So they were a little more tender, and we lost quite a few of those. There was a few plants here and there that we lost that were also marginal in nature, but those were kind of expected. We knew they were marginal, but we just didn't expect us to drop that severe, have our 50-year record temperature there.
The tour tomorrow, what time does it start and how long is it going to be?
Starts at 9 o'clock. If everybody sticks with the tour, it'll be roughly about 2 hours, so hour and a half to 2 hours. I know there is a few predictions for rain tomorrow, so I don't know. As we said, we've had a lot of predictions. We haven't had a lot of rain yet. So if you do come, you might bring an umbrella just in case. But, you know, we're looking at about 2 hours. You know, we're going to go through the plants, and I'll point out some of the plants that are more easily found as far as if somebody was looking for something for a landscape. I'll point out some of the plants that are more readily available in the nursery trade. And then other plants, you can see them in the desert, but you're not going to be able to purchase them because they just either don't, the seed doesn't propagate well, or they're very, very slow growing and they just aren't good for retail sales because they want something that grows fast and, you know, fills in fast.
People might wonder, John, as far as the desert garden itself, I guess some areas of it, is it low maintenance because it's native to this area and, you know, people don't go out and water or take care of something out in the desert, so they wonder, if I get one of these, am I not going to have to go out and take care of it every day?
A lot of it depends on the level, and, you know, when you take a plant, a native plant, and you bring it in, grow it in a container, and then put it into an urban yard, it's not in its natural habitat, so it does need some care, and they can withstand the heat, and, you know, if they're the cold hardy, they'll withstand the cold, and the maintenance level depends on basically where the plant's placed at and how you look at your landscape. We have a lot of people at the leucophyllums, the Texas sages, that are used quite readily in a lot of landscapes here in El Paso. They're pruned into little balls and squares and stuff, and that is not a needed pruning technique. The plants should be allowed to grow to their natural size and shape. If they get a little leggy, you can come in and make some selective cuts, but you shouldn't have to come in and start shearing them. And that's going to be high maintenance once you get into the shearing habit. Our garden, we have a lot of plants packed in a small area, so we have to do a little bit more pruning just to keep plants from overtaking each other. So we kind of prune them, kind of keep them separated out a little bit. But typically it's a lot less maintenance, and you know, you can put them on a drip system as an insurance policy to help with watering. With the timers and clocks now, you can set those. If you have to go on vacation, you got a landscape that's not going to require a lot of care while you're gone. So it can take care of itself. And then once you get back, then you can step back in and do what needs to be done.
So if you do kind of sculpt their bushes and stuff like that, is that bad for the plant? Does it stop it from growing?
It actually is in a way, because the plant is having to bring up stored food reserves for that new growth. It uses more water. So if you shear a plant, it's actually going to use more water than if you left it alone. And when it's putting on new growth, it's using up food reserves, so it has to continually make new food reserves. And if you're cutting it off on a regular basis, you're removing some of the food reserve, plus you're cutting leaves off to manufacture new food for the plant. So it does weaken it in a way.
You go out in the desert and you don't see a square plant.
Right.
Because that'd freak out the other plants.
Right.
Hey, what's Johnny? He's not part of the family tree. What's going on? Tomorrow, when they come and they learn about all these, are they going to learn also about the different types of flowers and perhaps birds?
Yeah, our garden does have a lot of unique pollinators that come into it, and a lot of it because it does have native plants versus a traditional landscape. Your traditional landscape will bring kind of the regular bees, maybe a few butterflies, but a native garden brings in a lot of the native pollinating insects, be they bees, wasps, flies, butterflies, moths, birds of different kinds. So you see a whole different set of insects come in to help pollinate the native plants. So the insects need those particular native plants to help with their life cycle, but the plants also need those insects to help with their life cycle. So it's a kind of a mutual benefit.
You mentioned that the gardens may be partially hidden from the students sometimes, and I'm wondering if sometimes the students kind of like it that way, because you see as you go up the driveway there in the back where you see the little shaded area, a lot of students will go there and have lunch or study, and it's very quiet and very pretty.
Right. We found a lot of professors back in there, too. They like to get away from the hubbub of the classroom and stuff and just kind of take a break and relax a little. One of them, you can hear the dripping of the water and kind of has a nice resonating sound there. So it's a nice place to sit back and just kind of take a half hour out of your life and enjoy the plants and the flowers and the insects.
The structure itself that people see when they go there, as you approach it, there's like a fort there. Tell us a little bit about where you got that idea, and is it based after a certain fort? Or
the fort is kind of a artist's rendition of what a fort from the 1600s might look like. Typically, they're much larger than what we have there. They're round in shape and sometimes two and three stories tall. And they would have a gate on it, so if they felt they were going to be attacked, they would bring their livestock, their valuables in on the bottom floor and then be up on the second and third floor with windows to be able to shoot out of or protect their home or their fort there, so to speak. And so we call that L14, and it's kind of a idea of a old fort in ruins, you know, starting a little run down, but we've put some plants in there and stuff. But the garden itself, we're trying to show some landscape ideas for homeowners, so if they come through it, they see these different areas, like the patio garden and the Sierra garden and the Waco Pond area, that could be recreated in somebody's home landscape.
Now, some people like to put also stones, river rocks in their garden. Is there a specific type of rock that they should maybe put out there, because it may be harmful to the plants if you put in the wrong type?
You just kind of maybe want to limit the amount of actual concrete poured, because concrete, mortar, you know, all that has a lot of lime in it, and it's a much stronger lime than what the lime that's in our soil already. It's alkaline, but the lime that's used in a lot of mortar and cement and stuff is a very, very, very alkaline material, so it can really change the soil in the immediate area and make it super alkaline. So it can cause some problems with plants, native plants, if they aren't native to a real alkaline soil. Now, if they happen to be in a traditional landscape plants that like a highly organic, more moist type soil, then they're going to hate a soil that has a lot of lime in it and alkalinity, so they'll react to it. So you see a lot of plants that, you know, the leaves turn yellow from iron deficiency, and that's due to the high lime in the soil.
John, tell us again tomorrow's schedule for the tour.
Tomorrow's schedule starts at 9 o'clock, and again, there's a lot of construction on campus, so parking's going to be at a premium, especially around the museum, because they've got University and Wiggins pretty well shut down, and so I would advise people to use the parking garage there on Sun Bowl. The best way to get to the museum is to come in off of Sun Bowl onto University and come in by the guard shack, or use that parking garage that's right nearby. You can come in on Rim, and there is some limited parking on Wiggins, but it'll be first come, first serve, so there's a couple different options. Again, don't have any idea how many might come tomorrow, but feel free to come by the garden anytime.
John, thank you very much for being with us here today. We've been visiting with John White. He is the curator for the Chihuahuan Desert Gardens as part of the Centennial Museum. And again, that tour tomorrow starts at 9 o'clock. If you want to find out more information, you can go to utep.edu and then go to the Centennial Museum and Chihuahuan Desert Gardens webpage, and they have all the information there for you, and you can also download a guide. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Louis.
Focus on Campus is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Norma Martinez. Our producer is Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Focus on Campus. I'm Louis Sines.